Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Clinical psychologist Lisa Aitken's last visit with us for her masterclass in mindfulness turned out to be one of our more popular podcasts for this season, so we're rapt to have Lisa back for another Open House masterclass. This time round, boundaries, knowing when to say yes or no, or as it's known within mental health circles, over and under functioning, as it turns out. Lisa, welcome back to Open House. Let's put a stake in the ground because terms like boundaries cover a fair whack of territory, don't they?
Boundaries are pretty broad. In its broader sense, it's anything that helps you differentiate you and your responsibilities from someone else and their responsibilities, which sounds fairly straightforward,
yeah.
But it's actually a little bit more complicated than that.
Because with those lines in the sand come a whole bunch of other emotions, guilt, anger, sometimes a sense of self-preservation. Where we put those lines in the sand reflect who we are.
That's true, it does. And I think especially in Christian circles, drawing those lines in the sand can have a bit of a bad rap or can
yeah.
happen in certain situations. Especially the idea that if I'm a Christian and I'm called to love self-sacrificially, how do I then put boundaries around that? You know, if I'm meant to be putting other people ahead of myself, how do I put a boundary around it without feeling guilty?
And how can I be sure that my resistance to not cross a boundary isn't just selfishness?
Absolutely. Hopefully at the end of our discussion today, people will have a clearer idea of that.
Excellent.
And I think we have to start with looking at Jesus and how he sets boundaries. You know, he withdrew from crowds. He only picked 12 disciples. There may have been others, you know, hankering to be, but he drew a line in the sand there. He didn't always agree to people's requests. And I think it's part of his humanness. You know, when we have limits, don't we? I got really sick last week because I pushed my physical boundaries for the 2 weeks before that. You know, we have a point where we have to stop and say, I just can't do everything. And that works emotionally and mentally as well as physically. And we have to pull back. And I think when we look at Jesus, we get one of the clearest principles for boundaries, which is that when you think about it, what he did for us were things we couldn't do for ourselves. Now, ultimately, I guess his death on the cross, we couldn't save ourselves. He did it for us. But I think that principle is the question that we have to keep asking ourselves in any relationship around boundaries. Am I doing something for someone else that they actually could do for themselves, in which case I've stepped over a healthy boundary, or am I doing something that they need me to do?
I guess this is where under and over functioning comes in, Lisa.
Well, I'd like to just define these terms, over and under functioning.
Yes. Yeah.
So over functioning is when we do things for other people that they are capable of doing for themselves. And it's a bit like a seesaw, so that when you have an over functioner, you also have an under functioner, who is the person who is left not doing what they actually could be doing for themselves. And I think now, Galatians 6 is really helpful here. We're told to bear one another's burdens, and that word burden means like a huge boulder that you couldn't possibly carry by yourself. So we just step in and help each other out in those huge things in life. Yeah. But at the same time, in that same chapter, it says we're all called to carry our own load, which is more like the backpack, the daily responsibilities. But when I look around at church, I don't know about you or families, I see a lot of people carrying other people's loads, the backpacks that they really could be carrying for themselves. And that is sort of what over-functioning is. And you can think of it, the best example is probably, you know, if you have a two-year-old and you tie your two-year-old shoelaces, because they cannot tie, well, mine certainly couldn't, it did to tie their own shoelaces.
Yeah.
That's not over-functioning. You're just doing what needs to be done. But if you're still tying your 12-year-old shoelaces, you know, you're clearly in the realm of over-functioning, and you can also clearly see that you've left them under-functioning, not able to tie their own shoelaces, which, of course, they should be able to do.
Okay.
An extreme example, but it sort of gives you the idea that when we step in and do for others what they could or should be doing for themselves, we leave them de-skilled and sort of not competent. And I see this all the time in counselling, especially around parents who are really struggling to set boundaries with their kids, and they're over-functioning and they're doing too much of their homework for them, or they're thinking on their behalf, or they're setting goals for them that the kids don't have for themselves. And of course, it leaves the children unable to learn how to do that for themselves. Or I see it in marriages where, you know, for example, a wife might be over-functioning for her husband, carrying too much of the weight in the household, worried and carrying his emotional burden. Oh, I don't want to upset him. It happens in churches, it happens in families, it potentially can happen anywhere. And that big question is, am I doing something for someone else where actually they could be doing it for themselves?
Lisa, this, I don't want to moralise here, I want this to be an open conversation, but I'm interested in how we get to that point. At what point we lose objectivity and then step over that line? Is it out of a sense of our own needing to have a role in a relationship, or is it something else aside from that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think you're right. I think partly it is our own need to have a role, and it's really hard to watch other people struggle, especially people you love, and it makes us anxious. You know, easier to just keep making my kids breakfast even though they're teenagers, because I don't want to watch them. They're not good in the morning, and I don't want to watch them struggle and get anxious about how they're going to run their day. Mm-hmm. So it can be that it's just hard to watch other people struggle, even though it's actually in the struggle that they will learn and become competent. You know, we've spent years talking about self-esteem in the world of psychology, and it's been focused on words, that we give each other self-esteem by telling each other that how good we are, or that we tell ourselves in our self-talk, you know, affirmations how that we are good at these things. But actually, the experiment of that has been shown now to have pretty much failed, and what we need for self-esteem is behaviour that shows that we're autonomous and competent, that we can do things, getting out and doing things. So actually, when we over-function for people, although we think we're doing the best thing for them, it's usually well-motivated. Mm. In fact, we're not allowing them to work through things for themselves or to become competent for themselves. I see this happen a lot when I see clients who are quite depressed, and their families, totally well-meaning, are running around doing everything for them, not realising that in their over-functioning, sometimes they actually leave the depressed person under-functioning to the point that they don't realise they have to get out and do some things for themselves, even something as basic as I need to go for a walk, I need to phone someone, I need to sort my own food, but everyone's running around doing things for them, leaving them, contributing inadvertently to that sort of under-functioning position. But I think as well as our own desire to help and not want to sit in our own anxiety of watching others struggle, sometimes in our own family growing up, we have this role of the very helpful person.
Yeah, absolutely.
The person who gives advice.
Yeah.
And it feels good to be that person who can step in and give advice. And it's a running joke in psychology circles that we counsellors are nearly always set up to be over-functioners. You would just have to ask my own children. They, of course, being psychologist children, know the lingo, so they just say to me, "Mum, back off, you're over-functioning," which is great. But I can see it in my own life. My father developed cancer when I was a teenager. He died at 15, and my mum sort of collapsed, and I had to step up, the only child. And this role of being the person that she could turn to and other family members could turn to sort of felt good, and I felt like I got groomed into this role of the one who people could turn to. And there's many of us out there who feel groomed for this, and it does sort of feel good. And I watch it in, I supervise trainee clinical psychologists, and it's so hard for them to not just step in and give advice and tell people what to do, but to ask questions that invite other people to think about what they need to do for themselves. And that's a great skill. That's a really hard skill to develop, inviting other people to think rather than just stepping in and doing for them. And the last thing I think sometimes it's a distraction. You know, if we're really focused on others, what I have to do for my kids, what I have to do in my ministry at church, what I have to do at work, then it can be a bit of a distraction and we're not having to face our own issues.
So it's a place to hide.
Emotions. I'm sorry?
So it's a place to hide.
It can be. Absolutely, it can be.
Okay.
Not focusing on your own goals, on what's going on for you.
How then do we pull it back without appearing to be unchristian or uncharitable or something unworthy of the relationship?
Yes, that's right, which brings us back to that first question.
Yes.
It's tricky because especially if you've been the over-functioner and you're pulling back, those who have you've been allowed to under-function aren't going to be very happy about that usually.
No.
Even though actually, it's better for them. They've been floating along probably quite easily with you doing all these things for them. So you have to do it gently and you have to pull back gradually. And I say this from years of experience with this with my own children, pulling back slowly and gently and gradually and getting clear, doing a bit of thinking about, okay, what is my responsibility and what is their responsibility? It's harder with kids because they're changing all the time, and what they can and can't do changes as they get older. Easier in a way with adults, with our marriages, with our church relationships, with our work relationships, to be able to, you know, you might even have to say to someone, you know, I've been really thinking about this, about you actually are able to do perhaps even more than you think. To the under-functioner, you might need to say this, and I'm realising I'm getting quite burnt out. And I think feeling resentful yourself is a really good warning sign that you're stepping into over-functioning. And likewise, the other people who are under-functioning might be feeling resentful.
Mm.
Emotion, the classic symptoms of burnout, emotional exhaustion, not feeling like you're accomplishing anything, seeing people as just jobs to tick off, you know, when they start to kick in. They're good warning signs that you probably need to pull back and think. And it's a hard conversation to have, to say, look, I've really been thinking about this and I might need to pull back a bit for my own benefit as well as for your benefit.
And I'd imagine, Lisa, that if you're the go-to person for everybody else's problem, it takes an enormous amount of courage for you to seek somebody else's support.
It certainly is. It certainly is fantastic for your own self-growth.
Yes.
To have to do that. But very humbling.
Yeah. What are some questions we can ask ourselves to find out where we are and what to do next?
I think doing a bit of exploration about that emotion of resentment is really important, because if you're starting to do things and feeling resentful, then you probably, there's some one of those dynamics going on.
Yep.
It can be helpful to slow down and look at your own self-talk around this. What are the comments that you're making as you go to do something for your husband, serve in your church, or as someone does something for you? What are you saying to yourself in your head about that? That might be very revealing, that actually you don't want them to be doing that for you, or you realise that you feel lost and helpless without them doing it for you, which might be a big warning sign that you're in an under-functioning position.
Yep.
and you need to get out of it. So I guess it's slowing down and looking at your own feelings and looking at your own thoughts. Hard to do in that busy society, just that whole process of doing some self-exploration.
I guess the paradox here, Lisa, is that we don't want to be seen to be selfish when we make space for ourselves, and yet over-functioning could inadvertently be an act of selfishness.
Yes, absolutely, you're right. It is done to manage ourselves, and it looks so good from the outside doing all these things for other people, which is how we're complex human beings, aren't we? We're so complicated, and it takes a lot of thinking through this tightrope of, if my 15-year-old and I'm still getting her breakfast every morning, am I over-functioning or am I just helping her get to school on time? And there's no right or wrong. You have to stop and look at your own life and what you're responsible for, what the other person is responsible for, and make an assessment and either pull back or step in, whichever is required. Probably the best way that I have learnt to step back from over-functioning for my children has been to ask Jesus to help my children, to pray for them. And that has been a massive anxiety calmer for me, that that he can step in and do what I thought was my role, but actually he can help them work out what, how they can fulfil their own responsibilities.
Lisa Aitken, thank you for leading us through the complex area of boundaries. I had no idea there was a term for doing too much for somebody else. Over-functioning. And I guess at the heart of it, always be aware of why it is we do the things we do when it comes to relationships with each other.
Yep, that's true. Can I just do a final plug for some fantastic books on this topic,
sure,
or around this topic, by a woman called Harriet Lerner? Some of your listeners might have heard of her. Their book's called The Dance of Connection, The Dance of Anger. The Mother Dance is a fantastic one, and she picks up a lot of these over-under-functioning themes and beautifully writes about them.